Sovereign Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin Walter, your host. True Wealth is brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service. We've been here in Spokane for over a couple decades. We operate from one of the finest facilities nationwide, industry-related. We've had our primary customer base, I suppose, is Christian, and we are a Christian-owned and operated business. We are constantly never-ending in the process of buying and selling all forms of coins and collections, scrap gold, jewelry and diamonds, precious metals is our specialty. Really, our specialty is investment portfolio building. We do a lot of that. We've been doing it a long time. You can imagine after 20 some years what we've seen. We've seen market movements. I personally have been in the financial industry since 1990 when I got out of college. That's actually before that, from the 80s when I was studying economics and things like that. So whatever that figures out to be, you know, 30 years, you get to see a few trends. I remember the crash of 87 was kind of a wake-up call that hit pretty fast, and people didn't see it coming. And it was sort of the first big hammer to hit America's stock market since the crash of 29, really. I mean, overall, before that, the stock market had just kind of plodded along, and people would invest. You know, it's really interesting, folks. The point of stocks was a sort of a safety valve. People would buy stocks with the specific intent of gaining dividends. In other words, getting a little piece of the action, you know, small percentages, but suppose it's stability. And then, you know, over time, you know, companies would get to a level where they kind of had to go public, and they just would get that big, and that would happen. And then we worked our way, you know, we had the crash of 87, of course, big rebound. Brokers got in around 90-ish, 91, 92, I suppose. I was managing a bank branch and really got pushed hard, you know, to become a broker, which, I mean, my belief system now and my belief system then, basically then I was just completely naive. I didn't know any better, but I didn't take the job. Probably would have made a decent living there, but God didn't have that in mind for me. He put me in banking and finance, and I got exposed to money. I was a mathematician and economist, and it all sort of blended together. It fit well, and I've got a very strong mind for numbers and money and performance, and sort of a photographic memory for the performance of anything to do with numbers, coins, stocks, you know, dates, things like that. It's just a blessing that God gave me, and so over time, when I was with the bank, my final position was regional manager for Bank of America over a three-state region. Finally got to the point where they had expanded my territory so far, no one could have done it. And it was supposed to be a blessing. I think they were preparing to promote me to another level, but it just wasn't my thing. God called me into this business, which was a blessing. And it's been good ever since. But life is life. I mean, we've had our ups and downs, and you know, running the business, one problem I have, I absolutely love coins like you don't even know. I mean, I just love rare coins. I invest in them. I'm a hardcore collector, but I collect as an investor, okay? And what's really ironic in my years in this business, those that do the best on their long-term investments are collectors, because it's really interesting. You buy stuff that's scarce and hard to come by, and they look for certain qualities, right? They want problem-free original coins and certain coins that are very scarce and hard to get. You know, you've probably watched the Antique Roadshow where you got a dresser that is worth $100,000. Why? Because there's very few of them out there, and it's been preserved in exceptional condition. The same applies with coins. There's large quantities of coins that are not good investments, okay? There's condition rarity. And then there's existence rarity. Coins that have low mintages and low survival rates obviously are good investment coins, as long as the collectors are interested in them. And that's the stuff that we put into portfolios. Our portfolios emphasize gold and silver, especially now. Right now, the market pricing is just tremendously beneficial, aggressive, inexpensive, motivational, value-based, whatever you want to call it. It is truly, honestly, the time to get in. It really is. I mean, you've heard it before. I don't know. Do whatever you want, but I'm telling you, if you are tied up in stocks and bonds, I wish you the best. I feel for you. And I don't necessarily think that you have a good future ahead. I know you don't. There's no way that this market will sustain itself. If you've noticed, since the Trump, I don't know what you want to call it, the Trump rally hit post-election, it ran up and it's held up. But it's bouncing off of a ceiling. And primarily, you look at the indexes. You can look at different stocks, and they're going to operate differently. But when you look at, like, the Dow and the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ, they go up, and they go, wow, and then they go down. And then they go up, and then they go down. And then they go up, and then they go down. And, you know, we've basically had the last I'm looking at a graph here. So Trump gets elected. The market runs from around 18,000 up all the way up to 25,000 points on the Dow over a couple year period of time. Wow, right? I mean, it goes up 7,000 points off of 18,000. So you're talking maybe, 37% gain. But then since late 2017, or mid-2017 till now, mid-2019, we've gone nowhere. It's remained flat. Why? It was a rally. It was a hyper rally. It was a hyperinflation rally. It was all the currency Obama created. It was the hype of Trump, the talk, the positivity, the power of his tongue. And, you know, because he's a businessman and he promised all these deregulations, which he hasn't really carried through on completely. He hasn't really done what he promised per se. I don't want to badmouth him because he's a much better president than a lot of options. I love this Democrats having 22 candidates so far ready to roll. They're going to just chew each other's flesh up. They got a year and a half till election time. Once they get done tearing each other apart, then Trump will go to work on them. And pretty confident he'll hold his position. My number one complaint against Donald J. Trump is that he's not really a Republican. He's a populist. And what I mean by that is he's not at all interested in fiscal responsibility. He wants to spend money. He wants to build certain kinds of infrastructure, you know, the wall. And he had some great ideas. I mean, if you're going to just blow money, which obviously they are, and they're not going to stop, you know, he wanted to improve, you know, bridges and land, you know, different national parks and buildings and facilities. You know, that stuff, I mean, if you're going to just totally blow money, why not? I mean, don't misunderstand me. If you're going to blow the money, at least give us some infrastructure. Obama, people don't realize Obama was sending $1 trillion a year overseas, primarily ridiculously enriching Islamic nations to an extreme. Why? Because he was a Muslim. You don't like to hear it. I'm sorry. I know you can get all this rubbish on the media and the web that says this and that about him. There's videos. He's claimed to be a Muslim multiple times. There's no questions about it. So long story short, we've kind of hit this cap. We're bouncing off the ceiling. We're in a hyperinflation zone. I've been covering, you know, different things lately on a little more financially direct than I'm used to doing. And you guys have heard it. And, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, the stability of metals, the biblical endorsement of metals, the fact that God created them and mentions them in Genesis chapter 2, tells you where to go, tell people where to go get them, blesses his patriarchs, blesses his people with them, uses it for currency on this earth completely and totally until about, you know, basically 40, 50 years ago. The Bretton Woods Act was kicked in 46. We really went off the gold standard in 71. And since then, we have had crazy hyperinflation. We had opportunities at the dot-com craze of the late 90s. We had enough currency to pay off all of our deficit and come close the Federal Reserve and go back to the constitutional method of currency. No desire at all by any politicians, because they all lose power. And guess who rules the world? The banks. Central banks are so powerful. And they control everybody to such a degree, people just have absolutely no clue of the power that they have. They literally rule the earth. I mean, literally. And if you think about it, when you get into what the Bible says, okay, you've got the world, right, the worldly way. The Bible says precious metals assets is the way to go, okay? Simple as that. Well, what do you got? You got the banks, you got your stockbrokers, you got the Fed, you got the Treasury, you got everybody against it, right? And that's a lot of pressure. Plus, you've got the fiat currency system, the Federal Reserve, which created the COMEX, the Commodities Exchange, so that they could manipulate the price of commodities, especially precious metals, so people didn't automatically say, fine, you can have your paper money, I'll take my precious metals. They fooled people, absconded them out of their precious metals. After they created the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, they continued to print gold redeemable clauses on currency until 1929. And even, you know, the 29 notes continued to circulate. So people thought they could just go redeem their money. So they turn in all their gold and silver. The reason was that, what happened was by the time FDR got in office, who was a radical socialist. I mean, his first New Deal was a direct quotation of the 12 Planks of Communism by Karl Marx, to a T, okay? So communism had gone rampant. Socialism, they've changed the name, they've softened it. Now it's socialism, you know. Socialism becomes communism. 59% of Americans now favor socialism. I would not be surprised if that's the direction we go. And that's the demise of America, period, done, over with. Those that produce lose hope, give up. You know, every time it's been implemented, it's failed. And then you get people that say, well, it wasn't implemented properly. Well, what's properly? You are absconding, stealing wealth from people and giving it to people that aren't working or producing. And then people don't want to work. They don't want to produce. They're like, if you're going to take my money, I'm not going to produce anything. The government tries to force them to produce. And then there's stories in Cambodia and things like this where they would literally kill people who would have like rice paddies, and they would, rice paddies, I think. But anyway, they'd have these rice farms, and they would catch them trying to keep enough rice to eat, and they would kill them. We've seen this with Mao Zedong and Stalin, and they just pick one group after the next. They get totally paranoid. They, you know, it just becomes massive human genocide. And what's interesting about that people do not understand or realize is that we are currently in a genocidal state as we speak, okay? So you go to like the Iraqi Christian Relief Council, or I think it's iraqichristianrelief.org, and they have so much information about genocide that's taken place. And this goes all the way back. Years back, I went with a pastor friend of mine, a very, very good friend of mine, and his wife and my wife, and we flew to Australia to do some work on church plants, and we were speaking, and this lady in the back of the room, it was interesting. It was a church filled with Iraqi dissidents, and I didn't understand that Islam, you know, even though the U.S. military was over there, Islam is alive and well. Okay, fine. We believe in freedom of religion, which I read a little bit last week. It's kind of confusing. Jefferson wrote some harsh warnings against it. And then in other cases, he said, well, you know, we got freedom of religion. I guess we got to allow it. But he warned against future presidents that didn't understand history that would just open the doors. The thing is presidents have the right to, they're in charge of the border. So half of this rubbish that, you know, the Ninth Circuit Court and stuff does to Trump is completely unconstitutional. The president's job is to protect us. He's the executive branch, the executor of the law. He's the ultimate cop, the commander in chief, the ultimate head of our U.S. military, right? So his job is to protect us at the borders and within on the big scale, on a large scale. So when Trump gets in office and he starts to, you know, decree certain behaviors at the border, like a wall and things like this, and the left goes crazy, that's unconstitutional. I mean, they're just absolutely doing everything they can to impede his actions. He's, you know, you listen to his family talk, he's pure and he loves America. And this, you know, I'm sure you've heard way too much about this Russian collusion hoopla. Total baloney. I mean, it's been proven wrong by Mueller. The left won't give it up. It's really super sad. This has never been done to a president before. They keep using the word impeach, impeach, impeach. Impeach for what? For doing his job? You know? So there's this. So we were in Australia. This gal's really weeping and moaning and wailing in the back. So I'm speaking and I go back there and talk to her. Her son had just been murdered by Muslims in front of his 3 and 5 year old. Why? Well, he converted to Christianity. They found out, and then they go and they get the jizra, okay, which is the tax. So if you become a Christian, they can just tax the tar out of you, right? They can tax you to death, okay? And then that's what they do. They tax you till you're broke at gunpoint, and then once you're broke, they kill you. That's it. Totally legitimate, totally legal. That's Sharia law that they want to implement all around the world. It's an absolute, complete, and total theocracy. And I don't know if you understand the threat of that, but that is so serious. When you combine religion with a government, it doesn't work. Not even Christianity. Why? Because what happens is they become like, you know, the Spanish Inquisition or in England, the Catholic Church becomes the primary church. And then it's no longer a church about Christ. It's a church about manipulation. And then they won't teach people how to read. And they do all their sermons in Latin so people don't understand. And then they don't tell them the truth about what the word says. And they start to implement morality. You cannot legislate morality, folks. That is so hard to understand, okay? Now, you think, well, abortion's immoral. We can legislate against that. Well, of course, but see, that's not legislating morality. That is legislating within the Bill of Rights, because we have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The very first sentence of the very first Bill of Rights, life. Then you go liberty, pursuit, happiness. Life. We have the right to life. So we're not legislating morality when we legislate against abortion. Okay? I had someone trying to debate that with me, that it was a moral issue. It's not a moral issue. The baby has separate DNA. The baby's a human. If you, you know, no matter where you are, you, the listener, if you're in a little box, or if you're in a big house, or if you're up on top of a mountain, or if you're in the bottom of a valley or a lake, or in a hospital bed, wherever, it doesn't matter what container or what's containing you or what location you are, you have rights as a human being. God-given freedom. Okay, and then the Bible is very clear about your, you know, the parable of talents and the ability to, you know, create your own future and create your own success or failure, and that's what it's about protecting. So just because they're in the mother's womb doesn't change the fact that they're a human being with separate DNA that need to be protected. And that's where they really have people confused, because they say, you can't tell a woman what she can do with her body. Well, it's not her body. It was her body when she decided to have sex or whatever. And I know there's the rape argument. And then I think Trump threw out a statement here recently about, you know, fine, you know, if it's really rape, I won't argue that. Well, and people just go up in arms, and we can have a huge debate over it. And I'm not saying he's right, but what he is saying, when I was young and I was in the Young Republicans, and abortion had become a really hot topic, and America was performing an extraordinary high level of abortions, 3 to 4 million a year when our population was 200 million, okay? There was a problem there, and we were arguing it, and they'd always go to rape and incest, and I don't remember what the other one was. And I would debate for the Young Republicans, and I would say, fine, I'd give it to them, fine. You can have your 0.2%. The real statistics on that is so low, but they'd say, well, it's up to 2%. Okay, fine, it's 2%, let's say. It's not, but you just give it up. You say, fine. Take it. Let's just say you can have that, because that's not where the real debate lies. The real debate lies is the fact that you're murdering a human being. And then they argue, when do they become a human being? Well, the Bible, God, who created everything, says they become a human being when they're conceived, okay? There's no other reference out there other than the Bible. You know, humans create their own mindsets, and we think we're so logical, and we can debate things and come up with our own theories. But the bottom line is that the only ultimate authority that's been around forever, that set the tone, that set the basics, that set all the standards, is the Bible. And the Bible says, from before you're conceived, God knew you as a person. And you think of all the millions. I had the statistics years back. I mean, it was unbelievable the amount of people who'd been aborted or babies. It was unbelievable. What did we give up? I mean, what accomplishments could these people have made? What talents did God put in some of these kids that they would have contributed to the earth? Would the, you know, we could live in a totally different earth with the technology or wisdom they could have brought. We don't know, but it's not, man, it is not our job to kill a baby that's, quote, unwanted or more unexpected. Because when women see a sonogram, that's why a lot of these crisis pregnancy centers, they want to get the woman in to see a sonogram of the baby and realize there's a real baby in you. It's not a, you know, they use terms fetus, embryo, whatever. And they take away from the fact that it's a baby. But you'll catch these lefties all the time slipping up and calling it a baby. They do it all the time. That's what it is. And we need to protect those lives. And Alabama just passed a no-tolerance law on abortion so they could run it all the way through the Supreme Court. We've got this new appointee, the guy that they ran through the ringer, the new Supreme Court justice. It was terrible. And, you know, he said he would stick with precedent and all this. We'll see. When that hits the Supreme Court, we'll see. If Trump gets reelected one more time, he's going to be able to plant the next, I think, another Supreme Court justice, and we'll have a conservative court for a long time, and America needs it. Why? Because we're going to have socialists in office. The next thing you're going to see is hardcore socialism coming on board. It's where we're going. It's the way of the future. It's the millennial generation. And I got some other stuff I want to cover today, so I'll get moving forward real quick. When we talk about genocide, okay, so the Iraqi Christian Relief, I told you about the gal that was called, that I met, that whose son had just been killed. And there's, man, I don't even know where to start. I'm looking at all this stuff. You got the Assyrians, the Iraqis, the Chaldeans. All these Christians are absolutely being slaughtered. It's literally genocide at the hands of ISIS. ISIS came to Iraq in the summer of 2014. And nothing has been the same since. I mean, the terrorist group has attacked all the cities on the Nineveh Plain. I mean, you think about Nineveh, you know, Jonah and the whale. That's old country, folks. That's some of the oldest country. I mean, it's wild. I've been over there. It's like, wow, you know. And they dig up these cities, and they actually dig up some old technology. It's very interesting. But anyway, so these ISIS radicals, they terrorize, kill, destroy, wipe out these Nineveh Plain cities, towns, and villages. They're deliberately destroying churches. We're not getting, there's so much of this going on, we don't get the news on. They're going into churches, they're mowing people down, they're destroying Christian businesses, just like I was telling you a minute ago about the lady's son who died. They destroy Christian homes, and they're pigs. They're destroying the infrastructure that is basically the U.S. government is recognizing it as genocide, okay? So this is going on. You need to pray for these people around the world. The pre-trib rapture, folks, neat theory, but folks, just spend some time and meditate and pray, okay? Read Matthew 24. Read what Jesus told his disciples about the tribulation and all that. The miracle of God is like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They get thrown in the fire, and what happens? God goes in there with them. They see, you know, Nebuchadnezzar sees four people, okay? Four, not three, four. And then they come out. The only thing that's burned is their ropes that were holding them. But the three, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, it doesn't tell us that they saw the fourth person. The people on the outside saw the fourth person. And they said the fourth person looked like the Son of God. So Jesus came in there and protected them. That's how God works. He comes beside us and carries us through the impossible. And faith and prayer is so powerful. And folks, you know, I pray every day, and I'm sure you do too. But it's just, man, when you need it, when you really need it, that's when you really pray. And, you know, that's God. And God is not, you know, I know I'm offending people, this rapture thing, because Tim LaHaye, you know, really pumped it out there. And it's all about, you know, just coming, swooping down, taking us all away, letting the earth crash. Just crash and burn and destroy, killing, maiming, you know, absolutely letting the earth just go to hell, excuse me, but just falling apart. And then all of a sudden coming back with a loud shout and woo, we're back, woo, you know, here's the new Jerusalem, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to rule the earth for a millennial. And it's not God's style. Jesus says he comes once, and he says that people are going to see him coming on the clouds and, you know, in the sky. He's coming from somewhere out in outer space. The Egyptians believe that the planet Sirius is the God planet. They believe that's where God lived or lives or exists, somewhere around there. That's the central point. You look at the size of the, you go, oh man, the size of the universe, how do you even know? You study where we're located in the universe. We're located in the best vantage point of view of the beauty of any spot we could be. We're not, you know, our view isn't hindered by cosmic gases and other, tons of other stars, and you know, and our galaxy on actually revolves around Sirius. They discovered years back, and there was a wobble that they couldn't figure out. They always used this variable. Once they figured out it was Sirius, which is, I mean, it's pretty far away, but it's massive. So some believe that's where heaven's located. We don't know. We know that when Jesus left, where did he go? He ascended. He went up away. They watched him disappear into the clouds. So he was going somewhere in outer space or something, right? And when he died, buried, and resurrected, where did he go? Down. And what did he say? He went into Hades and stole the keys of death and hell. I mean, wow. Right? There's something down in the earth too. So that's pretty interesting. So we've got thousands of Assyrian Christian families that are totally displaced. I mean, stuff that we're just not facing. These, you know, you can imagine the Muslims abused, they're torturing, they're terrible. And these people are tired of running. So I'm just letting you know, this stuff's really going on. The Assyrian Christians I'm reading about here in Iraq and the Middle East, there's Christian genocide, and the Christians in Iraq, they're being forced to convert to Islam, pay the heavy jizya tax, and then die, or die at the hands of ISIS. Well, the tax ultimately is going to bankrupt them. They're going to die anyway. There's been a tragic depopulation as Iraq has lost approximately 80% of its Christian population. Listen to this. Since we came in there and scrambled everything up, they've lost 80% of their Christian population, a 2,000-year-old community, you know. Okay, so they had 2,000-year-old Christian heritage, and since the year 2003, when we went in, they've lost 80% of their Christian population. So, there's a debate there. I have my own feelings about whether we belong there. I'd been to Israel. I've done studies. I've talked to generals in the Mossad that said, you're doing the wrong thing trying to get democracy there. It's not going to work. Saddam, you know, he was killing whatever, you know, the Kurds. I don't even remember. And there's the different types of Islam, Muslims, and supposedly he was killing them off. And then we say, oh, what a horrible man. And then we go in and we kill the same people off by the thousands, multiples of thousands of what he was doing. They've had attacks on church. It says there's been 119 churches destroyed or bombed in Iraq since 2004, Christian churches. There's all these war crimes against the Assyrian artifacts. They destroy, ISIS bulldozed the 3,300-year-old Assyrian city of Nimrud. I mean, 3,300-year-old city, demolished 2,000-year-old UNESCO World Heritage city of Hatra, razed the 1,400-year-old monastery of St. Elijah, and I could go on and on and on. I mean, it's going on in the world. So pray for those people. That's real stuff, okay? I've got so many things interesting stuff to discuss here. There's another one, you know, on income tax. Boy, there's so many different things I've got here. This Prophecy News Watch. Financially, let's touch on this, okay? On the edge of disaster, right? Majority of Americans are absolutely living paycheck to paycheck. We've got hyperinflation running rampant, okay? And then that's why the Dow's up and all this, because because Obama went nuts. He completely changed everything. Whatever you wanted in the budget, there it went. He started all these, these loans to green companies and to bundlers, people who had supported him, and they, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars and more multiple times. And then he's sending $1 trillion a year overseas, and he's basically just created money like it's going out of style. We saw the stuff in Iran, $150 billion to the Iranians to stop their nuclear weapons program. But he made sure to give them all the money up front so that no future president could stop it. And now what are the Iranians doing? They're absolutely doing whatever they want. They say, oh, Trump's a threat, so we're backing out on our word, and we're enriching uranium, and we're doing everything we were doing before. I mean, absolute foolishness. Why would Obama do that? Why would you intentionally enrich a Muslim, the harshest Muslim nation, the leading capital, the haven of radical Islam? Why? Because you're a Muslim, okay? That's the problem. They have taqiyya, where the Quran commands them to lie for the furtherance of Muhammad and Islam. Islam is the recurrence of Baal worship. As Christ said, the beast system, or John in Revelations also said, the beast system, it was, is not, and will come again. Well, 585 AD or whatever it was, Muhammad goes and looks for a god because he hates Jews and Christians. He wants power from a god. He goes to Mecca, finds Allah, the moon god, which was also the same god as the Baal worship, and here we go. And so Obama, you know, lied out his tail, and he furthered the cause of Islam like no one ever before. I mean, it's the first time our nation has ever done such a thing, and he's absolutely flip-flopped the world. The whole thing that happened in Benghazi and Libya, the 60 CIA agents were there, and they didn't come to the rescue of Christopher Anderson and those because they were too busy diverting all the weapons that we'd given Gaddafi, who was the leader of Libya, he was crazy, but to run Muslim countries, you got to be crazy, right? You got to be nuts. And they took all the weapons, and then what'd they do? They circumvented them, rerouted them, sent them to Syria. Syria gave them to ISIS and armed ISIS. This is Obama's dream, is for Islam to take over. He hated colonialism, considered America a colonialist country, which we're not. Great Britain was. He hates Great Britain. His first act was to send the bust of Churchill back because he said, you know, Churchill was a master colonialist, which means you just take over a country and make them follow your traditions and your religion. And we've made, you know, through Christianity and all these civilized nations stemmed out of Great Britain, there's flaws, no doubt. But we've made huge strides in getting the word out across the globe and civilizing many nations. Nations in Africa that are not under colonialism, if you want to call that, they're heinous. They're filled with violence and destruction. And Obama fed that like nobody's ever fed it before, not to mention the massive increase in the dollar. It's all coming back home now. And that's why the cost of goods is going through the roof. Inflation is not the increase in the price of goods. Inflation is increase in the money supply. The increase in the price of goods is a symptom of inflation. Are you seeing it? It's huge. Construction, I bought a house. I need to do a light remodel on it, renovation. Cost of construction's like tripled in certain cases. Labor's way up, things like this. They're nuts. And people are spending their money on it like crazy because we have a real estate-based president, and that's just the thought process, and banks have tons of money to loan, and we're heading for the next big bubble. That's it. So Americans are now living paycheck to paycheck. They live on the edge. They're dragged down by debt, folks. I mean, people are loaded in debt. They have little hope for the future. You know, and how that's no way to live, right? But that's precisely where most Americans find themselves right now. Despite this supposedly booming economy, the middle class has continued to shrink, and most of the country is literally barely scraping by from month to month. In fact, this new survey that was just released by Charles Schwab, you know, the big broker, discovered that 59% of all Americans are currently living literally paycheck to paycheck. I think you might remember the study a while ago that 77% of people in America couldn't come up with $400 for an emergency if they had to. which is, wow, that's how broke we are. It's sad. That's not what America's supposed to be. Overall, 59% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck, according to the survey of, 1,000 adults by Charles Schwab. So the millennial generation, people ages 23 to 38, were the most likely to struggle between paydays at 62%. Then they have Generation X, 60% struggle paycheck to paycheck. Generation Z, 55%. And the baby boomers, 53%. Those numbers are, obviously they're high. But this is the truth. In fact, a study that was just conducted by researchers at the University of Chicago found that 51% of all working adults would not be able to cover basic necessities if they missed more than one paycheck. Missing more than one paycheck is a one-way ticket to financial hardship for nearly over half the country's workforce. One paycheck. They're one paycheck from absolute disaster. I was in that spot for years and years and years, and I worked in some really brutal environments, abusive bosses and all that. And I could not quit. I couldn't go without a paycheck for 1 week. I mean, I've been there, done that. My wife was bedridden with rheumatoid arthritis. I had kids. We were living in a poverty housing development out in the Portland, Vancouver area. Everyone around me was on welfare. We had a lady who would knock on our door and say, "You qualify for food stamps." And I was like, "I don't care. I'm going to pray hard and I'm going to work my tail off. If God wants me to benefit financially, if God wants me to have money, he'll give it to me. If he doesn't, he won't." But I put my heart and soul into prayer. And God did some great things. But it didn't always happen overnight. He let me sit in some very difficult situations for many years in a number of cases, because that's when he develops us and grows us. You know, that's how we grow and develop and prepare for what he's got next. So a lot of us are like, why does God allow this to happen? Why does God allow that? Because it makes us grow. It makes us better people. And it's no pain, no gain, essentially. You know, so if you think about that, another study from the NORC at the University of Chicago and Independent Social Research Institute found that 51% of working adults in the United States would need to access savings to cover necessities if they miss more than one paycheck. And then so when the next recession comes, which I've been talking about a lot, okay, please realize millions, hundreds plus of millions of Americans that suddenly lose their jobs are going to find themselves facing financial disaster immediately. This is sounds a lot like the Depression, doesn't it? And I think it's going to be worse. The survey that was just released by Schwab said there's a lot of reasons why Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. Rising college debt was one of them. These families are putting their kids through college. It's insane. I mean, that for younger Americans, there are so many factors beyond their control. They make it difficult to save. The rising cost of college is insane. The debt levels that these kids are obtaining is insane. Wages have remained stagnant. The cost of living continues to rise pretty rapidly, multiples of what they say the consumer price index is. Companies, there's all these jobs created supposedly by Trump, but they're all these non-livable wages, $14, $16 an hour. You can't live on it. It's tough. You get two people making $16 an hour in a household, and they can't get by. It's sad and it's tough. And then the rule is try not to live on more than you make, blah, blah, blah. You guys know all that, but it's hard. So today, Americans owe more than $1.5 trillion on their student loans, which is a bubble that keeps getting worse every passing year. I mean, I remember when it was $1 trillion just a few years ago. I mean, it seems like maybe, 4 years ago? I don't know. The following numbers I've got about our growing student loan debt come from a CBS News study. 43 million Americans have student debt. The average household with student debt owes almost $48,000. And 5.2 million borrowers are in default on their student loan debt. Now, remember, student loan debt is government guaranteed, so they got to pay it back. You can't go bankrupt on it. So it just sits there and haunts you, and the interest consumes you, and they'll garnish your wages and everything else. College costs keep rising. Like here, Ohio State, a public university, in-state students are paying $27,000 a year. Stanford is now $74,000 a year. I mean, why would anybody pay $74,000 a year to go to Stanford? Plus all your living expenses and whatnot. You know, it's a $100,000 a year school. That's where these – I talked a while ago about a banker friend of mine that said he saw a specialist, plastic surgeon or something that had $1 million in student loan debt. They're seeing people, doctors with $600,000-$700,000 in student loan debt. As far as all these public universities are concerned, the truth is you can get a better education from the internet without too much effort. I don't know. I spent a number of years at public universities, and the quality of education is a joke. I mean, I did applied mathematics, so it's not a real debatable topic. For my electives, when other people were playing volleyball and you know, women's stuff and, you know, different minority studies, I was taking, like, physics of astronomy, which I love. You know, I just stayed in the sciences. I got special approval to take these difficult science classes instead of these easy elective credits. But people don't normally do that. They want the path of least resistance. Don't ask me why I did that. Looking back, I don't know, whatever. I took on probably one of the top five hardest degrees there is. And, you know, where, I mean, I don't know that it got me anywhere, but anyway, we're filling the heads of our high school students with all kinds of nonsense about how college is the absolute key to a bright future, and we encourage them to not even worry about how much it will cost. They never discuss debt. We're not teaching kids about financial or fiscal responsibility. Why? Because our government is debt-ridden. Who's our great father? The government, right? And then it passes on down. Leadership is where people follow. I mean, it's just normal. They pile up enormous loans. They never scare these kids with how hard and how long it's going to be to pay them back. These kids don't even realize they're destroying their financial futures until it's too late. There's a girl that I know that graduated, and then it's like she said, the first time she saw her student loan balance, she had a panic attack. To pay for her education at a certain college, she worked full-time throughout college, and she still used up 11 student loans. She said, I graduated with about $53,000 in student loan debt. While working full-time in college, she said, that number hit me for the first time my last semester of college, and it was the first time I understood or saw the full balance and understood it. And she said she just went into panic mode. Our system of higher education is broken. It's another reason why Americans are living paycheck to paycheck, because of social media envy. Okay? Now, this is something I hoped to have more time to discuss today. Here's from USA Today. They said, call it keeping up with Instagram. 35% of Americans admit that they feel pressured to spend more than they can afford after seeing images of their friends' lives on sites like Facebook and Instagram, according to Schwab's 2019 Modern Wealth Survey. The FOMO, not sure who they are, effect. Oh, what is that? I don't know. Whatever. What is that? I don't know. FOMO effect is most dramatic for young adults. I wish I knew what that meant. Sorry, I don't. About half of millennials and 44% of Generation Z, those are born between 1995 and 2015, acknowledge that their spending habits are at least partly shaped by social media. So it used to be Americans were concerned about keeping up with their neighbors, okay? Now social media is everywhere. It's where everybody shows off. You're getting a completely skewed perspective of what's going on. And this it becomes particularly true when it comes to Instagram. So, you know, as far as I can tell, I'm not a big Instagrammer at all. At all. In fact, I'm not. Instagram's the perfect social media platform for narcissists. Everyone's constantly posting photos that show how attractive, wealthy, and adventurous they are. And those with the most followers tend to be ultra-attractive, ultra-wealthy, or ultra-adventurous. So for most of us, life is not a constant stream of Instagrammable moments, right? You just, you snapshot your best of the best of the best, and the rest of it is, it's like a guy I know that was dating this gal, and they would meet at these luxury resorts, and, you know, and they had kids, and they had this perfect relationship, and they traveled together. And then they got married and went into reality, and they both had to go to work, and they were like, wow, life, you know, we don't like each other. We don't have much in common. They just were doing all their dating by meeting at these luxury resorts. Totally deceptive. So there's so many studies that have found exactly the same thing. If you try to keep up with fantasies that you see on Instagram, the truth is that you'll go broke very quick. You know, the Bible says don't chase a fantasy for money. A study from home repair service HomeServe USA found that roughly 50% of consumers either have nothing set aside to cover an emergency or less than $500 put away. And research from the Federal Reserve has indicated that roughly 4 in 10 Americans cannot afford to pay $1,000 emergency, and then 77%. Can't afford a $400 emergency. So I actually, so one of the things that I've always stressed, you know, with my kids and friends and listeners is that if you ever want to make financial progress in life, you have to start by building your wealth. If your paycheck goes up, that doesn't mean you should start spending more money. Okay. It means you should save more. You should look at it as an opportunity to save more money. For most Americans, the future is now, and that means that most of them will ultimately end up facing financial disaster down the road. And that's, you know, what I'm trying to tell you with what we do, you know, save money. I mean, people get into, oh, is it gold, you know, and you know, I saw a commercial, why did you buy gold? You should buy cybercurrency, you know, Bitcoin, it's the future. Yeah, right. You know, these TV ads, why do you invest in gold? Why did you invest in gold? And then they claim the future cyber currency like Bitcoin. And I'm like, seriously? You know, how about we buy gold and precious metals-based assets because the Bible endorses, authorizes it. It's a divinely created, a non-perishable element. I mean, it literally is an element that is immune to the laws of entropy. Okay, there's 3 laws of thermodynamics. One of them is that everything is constantly decaying to a lower sort, to ultimately to dust. Gold doesn't do it. God made an element that doesn't do it. That's why heaven's made out of it. It never decays. It never rots. It never breaks down. There's no naturally occurring substance on earth that will destroy gold. You get the picture? It's the real deal. It lasts. It's super compact. It's immediately liquid anywhere at any time. Highly recognizable, portable. Folks, I'm telling you, I know. I talk to financial analysts. I have so many friends. God's been so good to me. So many intelligent people over the years I've met. In brokers and all kinds. I've got brokers that are, you know, moving clients into gold secretly and precious metals. They let us build portfolios where we put in, you know, hand-selected numismatic coins as a percentage of the portfolio. Just balance of hard assets is where it's at. It's the biblical way. That's why we invest in these hard assets. And cyber currency is guaranteed financial suicide, folks. And then, you know, I'm out of time. I was going to get into the social media envy issues. which I've got a lot of information on, but a little bit of time, okay? Not enough time. So America's current welfare state is what happens when you let a government of the people and for the people by, B-U-Y, the people. People argue Social Security and Medicare make sense because people pay in overtime, and they argue they're good because people need a government safety net for hard times. All of this will become a moot point when the U.S. dollar becomes worthless as it is and the U.S. government defaults on all of its debts due to rapid imminent inflation. The way that they default on debt is hyperinflation. It's simple. Obama got over 50% of the population dependent on the government with Medicare, Social Security, food stamps, and welfare. People directly employed by the government. There were at the time over 165 million or 53% of the population that was financially dependent upon an inevitably defunct entity, aka the American or U.S. government. This sways votes. It sets us up for extreme chaos when the system comes unraveled. We're letting people pour through our borders like a sieve. Why? They want the votes. Every great empire in history is converted to fiat currency, and every great empire has fully bankrupted and lost world dominance because of it. The longest and full fiat currency system has lasted somewhere in the neighborhood of 70 years after an exponential money creation phase, which the U.S. is definitely in right in right now. So, you know, I could keep going, but you know, the globe went to a full fiat currency system under the Bretton Woods Act of 1946. And, you know, we're ready to blow sky high. So this isn't an infomercial or a big sales pitch. This is just doing what God in the Bible tells you to do. And that is very simple. It's buying precious metals-based assets. It's simple. I mean, it really is, folks. It's just the way to go. Put your savings in it. Give us a call. Let us hook you up. I promise you in the long run, you'll do better. Our clients do really well over time. Really well, you know. You just put it away. Save. Save for retirement. Have a nice balance. Because what happens, you know, folks, there's going to be a huge correction. Then what happens to your investment nest egg? It's gone. Call Coins Plus, 444-0044. In Spokane, area code 509, and let us help you out. I mean, that's what we do. We're good at it. We've been doing it a while, and we put our hearts into it. We're Christian-owned and operated. We care. We win when you win. We sell at wholesale. There's no big games going on. Give us a Google review, 5-star. Get a free silver dollar. Give us 3 reviews online. Get 2 silver dollars. Take care. God bless. See you next time. Love you. Thanks. Bye.